A murder case in Southampton has now become a major row in the UK. A row about policing, racism and the far right. Henry Novak was stabbed last December, but while he lay dying, police handcuffed him and forcefully arrested him. Now there's been a violent protest championed by Tommy Robinson, and the fallout in the UK could prove disastrous. It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. Henry Novak was only 18 years old when he was murdered in Southampton. Attacked back in December 2025 by 23-year-old Vikram Digwa, who has now been given a life sentence with a minimum of 21 years. But the case isn't as simple as you might hear it first laid out. Body cam footage shows Henry repeatedly telling officers he had been stabbed. Police arrested him, handcuffed him as he lay dying after Digwa claimed that he had been the victim of a racist attack. And that has led to serious questions about how officers responded and whether the accusation of racism affected their decision making. In the last 48 hours, the case spilled out onto the streets. Hundreds gathered outside Southampton Central Police Station, led by Tommy Robinson. Protesters clashed with riot police near the scene of Henry's death, throwing bricks and chairs and cans and flares. The Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, condemned the violence and accused demonstrators of hijacking the tragedy. Meanwhile, Henry's own family have also asked that his death not be used to create more division. But it seems we're well past that point. Well, to discuss all of this, I'm joined now by Mark Paul, London correspondent with the Irish Times. You're very welcome to News Talk Daily, Mark. Let's start, I suppose, with the basic facts, what we know about what happened to Henry Novak in the minutes and the hours before his death.
So Henry Novak was a student in Southampton. It's a well-known student town. Southampton has got a vibrant student scene. He went on a night out in early December last year, on December the 3rd. He was seen on CCTV going to a pub, coming out of a pub. He was walking home back to his accommodation just before midnight. And he had a chance encounter on the street with Vikram Digwa. Vikram Digwa is a member of the Sikh community, who are often noticeable by the turbans that they wear. And Sikhs also very often carry ceremonial blades on them. It is a part of their face. And indeed, they tend to have exemptions in law to allow them to do that. And Vikram Digwa was carrying two blades as part of his face. And Henry Novak noticed this. And maybe he thought it was entertaining, or he thought it was interesting. And he whipped out his phone. He began to film Vikram Digwa. And he asked him, was he a bad man? Kind of a common phrase used amongst English youth. And that sparked a confrontation between the two men. Vikram Digwa was seen grabbing Henry Novak's phone, and the footage ended then. And so whatever happened between them was between those two men. But Vikram Digwa essentially stabbed Henry Novak four or five times with one of those blades that he was carrying. And then the police, and this was very close to Vikram Digwa's home, and then the police were called by Vikram Digwa's brother. And he told police straight away on the phone that his brother had been racially attacked and racially abused. He said that no weapons had been used, and he basically just portrayed it that he said we had been basically attacked by a white guy. That was more or less what he said. Police arrived on the scene, and then this body cam footage from the police shows what happened after that. That was harrowing. And Vikram Digwa was sentenced on Monday of this week, and the body cam footage was released after that, and that sparked all the trouble. It was really, really harrowing footage, Ciara. I'm not sure if you got a chance to see it, but it was really, really difficult. Really, really difficult watch.
It is a really, really difficult watch, because he seems to be lying, is it behind a car, sort of up against the wall of a house. Police arrive on the scene. You can see Vikram talking to police about what he said has happened. Then Henry he's sort of dragged out, isn't he, along sort of the stones on the driveway of the house, and you can hear him saying, "I can't breathe, I can't breathe. I've been stabbed. I've been stabbed."
What's happened to you, right? You've been stabbed. Whereabouts? I don't think you have, mate.
Oh, I can't breathe.
Put the hand in the cuff, mate.
And from what I could see from that footage, and it's quite a short piece of footage, the police seem to have sort of pulled up his top to see if he's been stabbed. You can hear them saying, well, we need to check this out, mate, because Vikram Digwa is denying he's been stabbed. And very quickly, you hear the officer saying, I don't think so, mate. So but to me, it looks like quite a cursory examination of young Henry's body.
That's right. And one of the most poignant things I found about it was just the position in which he was found. He had, obviously, in fear for his life of Vikram Digra, he had tried to clamber over a fence to get away with him. He landed actually in a bin and fell out of that bin and was basically kind of half underneath a car, it looked like, in somebody's driveway and when the police arrived. And that, I think, just the position that he was found, that tells you the fear that he had in the moments before he died, to clamber over a fence like that. And he was clearly, he was barely coherent, as the end, you know, as you say, he announced that he had been stabbed. He didn't seem to be covered in blood, but he was actually bleeding very heavily internally into his chest. I think after his death, they found 2 liters of blood inside his chest cavity. So he was dying in those moments. But the police came, they handcuffed him. They immediately, I suppose, took the word of Vikram Digra and his brother that this had been a racial attack. And the police, their initial, clearly, there have been no findings made yet about the police conduct. So everything I say should be seen in that context. That's still being investigated. But it seems that the police arrived, initially believed Vikram Digra was sorry, handcuffed and arrested Henry Novak, but he was dying at that moment. And soon afterwards, they realised that he was dying. And he died less than an hour after he was handcuffed.
And to be very clear, Vikram Digra absolutely frames this as a racist attack, that this was a sort of young white male drunk who made a racist slur against him, that's what happened.
That's how he framed it, and that entire set of circumstances has been rejected in the court, and Vikram Digra has been found guilty of murder and he's been sentenced to life in prison. And Vikram Digra was the perpetrator of this incident, and Henry Novak was the victim.
Tell me about the court case.
Well, in the court case, he was found guilty towards the end of May. There are ongoing proceedings also in relation to some other members of his family. So we just need to be a little bit careful around that. For example, it came out in the court case that Vikram Digra's mother took the blade that he had used to stab Henry Novak and hit it. Afterwards, after Vikram Digra was arrested, when police searched the house, they found a whole host of weapons, long blades, short blades, blades that are not just a ceremonial traditional Sikh blade that they carry, a Sikh dagger that they carry, and there were others. So obviously this is a young man who was weapons obsessed, and all of that came out in the court case. And what also came out in the court case then, or what I was struck by after the court case, was the dignity of Henry Novak's family, who came out and stood effectively on the steps of the court and said, look, we don't want this case to be used to spread division and to spread and to sow fear and hate. And they were very dignified in their response to that. But everything that has happened since that this week has not been dignified, I would say.
Yeah, but they did also say, and they were incredibly dignified, how difficult it was for them as a family to think that in their son's dying moments that he was lying on the ground handcuffed, not being believed.
That's right. I mean, a sense of injustice. I mean, look, nobody knows really what was going through Henry Novak's mind in those final moments, apart from, you know, fear and pain and suffering. But also he must have been aware of the fact that he was handcuffed, and that feeling of injustice, that he wasn't being believed, that you know, he was being portrayed in the wrong. And that's you know, for the best of us, for any of us in the best of situations, that's not a great thing to feel when you are fighting for your life, as he effectively was at that time, or dying as he was in that moment. It must have been absolutely awful for him.
And just, I suppose it is worth pointing out that in the court case, there was also evidence put forward that even if he had received medical treatment immediately, that his life wouldn't have been saved. But there are still major questions now being asked about the police's initial response. So talk to me about the fallout now for the police here, because there have been police who've had to move out of their homes because they've been wrongly identified as being involved in this case. There is a police officer who has resigned, and there also is this investigation by the Independent Office for Police Conduct, although they are not looking at sort of the role of individuals in all of this, are they?
So at the heart of this is the fallout of this and the reaction to it in the hard right of British politics is this allegation of two-tier policing, this notion that has taken hold in the kind of radical populist right wing of British politics, that there is one rule for people of ethnic minorities and one rule for white people, and that the rules are stacked against white people at the moment. That is the backdrop feeling. So there's a group called the MPCC, the National Police Chiefs Council in Britain, and it sent out a set of guidelines on dealing with racial minorities or ethnic minorities in Britain. And effectively those guidelines said, look, you know, people who are of ethnic minorities in Britain have had a terrible time with justing in the justice system and police over the years. So look, you have to balance things up sometimes in their favour a little bit and be sensitive. That's effectively what the guidelines meant. And it is now being portrayed, I suppose, by critics of the police and the conduct, that those kind of guidelines have almost hamstrung police, that they've turned them into woke police forces, and that the police just don't know where to turn on all of this, and that led police to act, the officers on the ground in this particular incident, to act on the ground in the way that they did, to automatically believe Vikram Digwa and to automatically assume that the white guy Henry Novak was the perpetrator of the incident or the criminal here or the bad guy here in all of this. So the fallout for this for the police has been huge. I mean, you've got to understand that in Britain, you know, obviously in Ireland we have the Garda Síochána. In Britain there are 45, I think, different territorial police forces. All of them run separately by separate chief constables. They all report into the Home Secretary, obviously. So different police forces run in different ways. There's always political pressure on the police over here. And the political pressure now on this case has flowed down because Britain obviously is a nation that is riven with division, and its politics are riven with division, and so the pressure then comes down on the police to deal with all of this, and whilst also taking care of operational day-to-day matters. So the chief constable of Hampshire and Isle of Wight Police, which is the particular territorial division that Southampton falls into, he has apologised already to the family. So the police already seem to have accepted that this was not done in the right way. But as you say, there's still an investigation ongoing into conduct and so on. But even UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer has stood up in the House of Commons, and I was there, I heard him say it. And he said, look, the police have serious questions to answer on this matter.
Yeah, I was thinking when I was reading up on this case, I thought back to the Stephen Lawrence murder and the, I suppose, reports that were done into the institutional racism in the Met Police and how that had really impacted how police investigated or failed to investigate the murder of Stephen Lawrence. And they put it down to the fact that there was racism there when it came to the treatment of young black men or indeed ethnic minorities. But I did hear Kemi Badenoch speaking in the House of Commons as well about this. And she did also say that since the murder of George Floyd in the United States, that she feels there has been an overcorrection within the Met Police in the UK.
That case shows that something has gone very horribly wrong with policing, and I think I know why. I think that in 2020, 2021, there was a response to the George Floyd murders that is overcorrected and caused a lot of problems. I put out a report in 2021 saying that our country is not racist and our police are not institutionally racist. A report, you know, from the 90s said that they had been at the time, but in 2020 and even now, they are not. I had meetings with the National Police Chiefs Council, the Met, the Association of Police and Crime Commissioners, the College of Policing, telling them that a lot of the race action plans that they had brought in because of the BLM movement were going to cause more problems.
And is that a general sense here?
That is certainly a sense that a lot of some moderate and reasonable people, not just people on the populist right, have, that perhaps there has been an overcorrection. I mean, if you remember the George Floyd case back in 2020, I mean, Keir Starmer, who's now the Prime Minister, he took the knee along with everybody else. There were debates in Parliament about racism and policing in the immediate aftermath of that. Now, that was a case about, you know, obviously a terrible, tragic case, the death of George Floyd, but it was thousands of miles away in the Midwest United States, yet there was a debate in the House of Commons about it. And I think what has angered a lot of people people on the populist right of British politics is that after Henry Novak was killed, there was no debate about him. Now, look, whether or not you can accept the proposition that police in Britain are, there's been such an overcorrection that they are now institutionally racist against white people. Look, I don't know about that. And I think there would be a lot of people of ethnic minorities in Britain who would raise their eyebrows at that argument. But that is where the argument is at the moment. That is where British politics is at the moment. And the friction and the division in this is just flowing down through the whole system.
Talk to me about Nigel Farage's response to this, because he was also speaking in the House of Commons and he said that we now have two-tier policing in the UK, and he said the response to the murder of Henry Novak should be one of rage.
Henry's family have responded to this in just the most extraordinarily dignified way. But I suggest the rest of us respond to this with pure, cold rage. This is wrong.
It, within the House of Commons, what reaction was there to that statement?
There was rage, all right, but it was directed at Nigel Farage, I would say. From across the House, I was sitting in the press gallery at the time, and I was kind of peering over the edge to see who was shouting back at him. And there were shouts of shame from all over the House directed at Nigel Farage, not just from Labour MPs, although mostly from Labour MPs, but also from some Tory MPs. I saw, I think, some Green MPs who were sitting immediately in front of him, turning around and shouting at him, Lib Dems, and from the SNP as well. He didn't seem bothered by all of this. Earlier on that day, Nigel Farage gave what he billed as an address to the nation, because, of course, you've got to remember he's trying to present himself as a future Prime Minister of Britain. And he had this address to the nation, which was filmed in a field somewhere, God knows where, where he basically said that, you know, enough is enough and that this was anti-white prejudice. So he received that reaction that he got in the House of Commons. But after that, he did an interview in Times Radio and he doubled down. And he basically said that what happened in Southampton the other night was just the beginning. Now, it was Tommy Robinson who called that protest in Southampton, and then a part of that protest peeled off and headed for Vicar Digwell's family home, and that's where trouble took place. And normally Nigel Farage and Tommy Robinson are on opposite ends of the spectrum in a sense. Nigel Farage keeps Tommy Robinson at arm's length because he doesn't want to frighten the horses with more moderate voters. He knows that if he gets too involved with Tommy Robinson, it's the end of Reform UK. But they seem to be on the same side on this. But there is another political context to this, which, of course, that Nigel Farage is defending his political party from a political challenge from its right flank. And that's one of the reasons why he's leaning into this issue so heavily.
You talk about the sort of boos and jeers within the House of Commons yesterday, and it literally did come from right across the House, SNPs, Labour, Lib Dems, Conservatives. Does that play into Nigel Farage's favour?
I don't know if it plays in. Like, Nigel Farage is taking an enormous gamble here. I think that's something that we should recognise, in that, you know, like, the reason, and you know, one of the reasons certainly that Nigel Farage is leaning into this is because of what's going on at the opposite end of England to Southampton, up in the north of England at the moment. There's a by-election in Makerfield where Reform UK are fighting Andy Burnham for a seat, and Reform UK could lose that by-election because of the threat from its right flank from another party called Restore Britain, which is even more right-wing than Reform UK. And I think Nigel Farage recognises that threat, and he knows that he needs to lean harder into this political stuff. So look, when everybody else is shouting at him across the spectrum, yeah, he can portray himself as the outsider speaking the truth. But he is also very, very conscious that there are people even more extreme in British politics than he is, and who are making hay out of this, and he has to compete with them for votes too. So there are a lot of different things going on here politically, but it's just symptomatic of the division that is just evident in every section of British society, I think, at the moment. It is a very, very ill at ease with itself society, and that plays through in its politics and its policing and in everything else.
So it has clearly been politicised, but as an issue, is this a genuine political one, do you think, Mark?
Well, I think in a country where migration is such a big issue, and by dint of that, and people are very conscious of their identities and their ethnicities and so on, I think in an environment like that, policing is always going to be a big and hot and heavy issue. Wherever different ethnicities and identities are having debates about their future and their future together as a nation. So yes, policing is a big issue here. I mean, it's only a couple of years ago that Baroness Casey had a report out about the London Metropolitan Police saying that it was still an institutionally racist force. The police is being dragged into issues around policing Gaza protests around policing Jewish areas like Stamford Hill. And so in every nook and cranny of British society at the moment where you find disquiet and unease, the police have to take care of these areas as well, and they have to try and do their job. So yeah, policing is a big issue in Britain at the moment. You know, they're pulled to the left and they're pulled to the right, and it must be very difficult to police, and the policing itself has become politicised. But the whole thing is just, I mean, it is just an incredibly hot and heavy issue at the moment in British politics.
But as you pointed out there, and as Keir Starmer pointed out, the police do have questions to answer here. And you only have to watch that body cam footage to feel that there are legitimate questions and a legitimate probe necessary into the police's response to this. So where do you think that's going to go?
Look, I think taking into account the fact that the police service, that Hampshire police have already apologised, I think there is already acknowledgement there that this did not go the way it was supposed to go. And I think the individual conduct of the officers on the ground will be looked into in the sense that, you know, did they do what they were supposed to do? Did they react in the way that they were supposed to? Is this standard practice that as soon as somebody says it's a racist attack that you handcuff somebody? But look, ultimately, Henry Novak was incoherent or barely coherent and clearly unwell when he was on the ground at the time. And the police in any situation there should immediately focus, you should think, and on the health of the individual on the ground and on his well-being. And if somebody says that they've been stabbed, and as is heard in that footage, you hear an officer saying, "I don't think so, mate." You know, that doesn't reflect well, I think, on some of the people involved there. So I think that will be examined closely. You know, did they really focus on Henry Novak back in the way that they should have, from the point of view that this was a young man who was clearly badly injured.
So do you think that anti-racism guidance that you talked about there, that was released by the National Police Chief Council, or the Race Action Plan, do you think that's now going to be reviewed and changed? And will we see changed policing in the UK?
There has already been an acknowledgement that these guidelines and the wording that I've seen used is that the wording in them may be clumsy. That's what the authorities have acknowledged. And these guidelines are now under review. But the overweening point that the police need to be mindful of the history of ethnic minorities in the justice system, I'm not sure that you can reverse that and turn the clock back on that. I mean, we've already had warnings from the other side this morning from people in the police world who are of ethnic minorities themselves, saying, look, you can't turn policing back, the justice system, back to the 1960s and 70s old school racism that was there as well. So it's a very, very difficult position to manage. It would be a very difficult thing to manage in any country, even if things were stable. But Britain is not a particularly politically stable place at the moment. There is so much going on. Its politics are like, I mean, sometimes you feel like you're in a Zanussi washing machine trying to follow British politics, because everything is just going round and round and falling over each other. And this is just one more problem for this country to deal with at the moment.
And so full of hostility and rage and anger, it seems. In terms of those clashes that we saw with police, in terms of that protest that we saw led by Tommy Robinson in Southampton, is that the end of it, do you think, for those protesters?
I think the police and the government would like it to be the end, but you just never know going into the summer. If you throw your cash and wind back to 2 years ago, the summer of 2024, and that case of Axel Rudi-Cabana, who stabbed those three girls to death in Southport. I mean, that sparked a summer of riots in Britain. And I think the fear is that there might be a repeat of something along those lines. Not necessarily about the Henry Novak case, because that seems to have calmed a little bit. Even Tommy Robinson has pulled away and from, you know, the need for there to be you know, those kind of muscular protests. But there could be another case that could come along out of nowhere. You can't predict these things. It's a summer where there's going to be a lot of summer drinking by football fans, because it's a World Cup summer, right? So you're going to have England football fans out in the pubs for matches, and you know, if the weather is good and if people are out, it's the time of year when these things can happen. And I think that is the fear, that there could be more public disorder in Britain this year, and then policing itself has to get involved in. And if the public disorder is about policing and the police have to police the public disorder, I mean, you have a whole feedback loop there of indignation and recrimination and difficulty for everybody involved.
Mm, and potentially a real tinderbox. Mark, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us on News Talk Daily and bringing us all of your insights. That's it from News Talk Daily this week. If you want to get in touch, do drop me a line on Instagram at Official Kira D. Until Monday morning, have a lovely weekend. Take care. Bye-bye.